Logo Centrifugal Podcast. I'm Chance Lunsford. I'm also Logo Centrifugal. You might also be Logo Centrifugal. While you think about that, let me introduce today's special guest. I have with me today, me pal, Justin C. Scott. This is a guy who I came across on Twitter, and one of the things in particular that struck me, besides the obvious thing, which is the eyebrows, is that here was this young guy, and he was able to articulate things that were wise and true well, and he was also sort of lumped in with this class of guys who were trying to deliver content in a consistent manner that was designed to, if somebody felt like it was useful, they could go out and do something about it. And I thought, well, that's pretty interesting. And, you know, after getting to know the guy over a while, doing an impression video, and just having some back and forth, you know, Justin's a pretty wise and intelligent guy, and he does a lot of things in his life to make sure that he stays along the right path, which is one of the things that's remarkable about him too. So look, man, with that, it's kind of a sparse introduction. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being here. And why don't you fill in the gaps on who you are and what you do a little bit?
Sure. Thanks for having me, man. And I very much appreciate the intro. It's funny when I do these things and I get these, it's just such a, like, it just makes my day for the rest of the day. I just can't help but like feel glowing, after just such just kind words of praise and acknowledgement. So I appreciate that very, very much. As far as what I would fill in the gaps on what I do, I'm a creative entrepreneur and a coach, and that's pretty much the whole encompassing, if you want to simplify, exactly what I'm here for and why I'm doing what I'm doing. I want to help people understand and realize that whether consciously or unconsciously, they are creators and they are constantly creating. And when you are able to move that process from an unconscious to a conscious one, you can take full control of who you are in order to live a life that matches with your ideals as a person that matches with your ideals.
Where do you think, there's a few pieces in there that you kind of have to piece together. That kind of realization doesn't come at you all at once. And I wonder, did you have a pretty solid instruction from your parents and your upbringing about some of these things? Or did you run into walls that you had to figure out how to get around? Or kind of, what's the genesis of you putting together some of these things into, you know, a way of being that you can then help share with other people?
Sure. Yeah. So I have kind of my background, at least, is something that, ironically enough, I used to have not shame, but like hesitation around sharing. Because a lot of people in my position or your position come from more, I want to say, tragic kind of backgrounds, right? They've gone through some very significant hardship that took everything they had to overcome. And that was the reason for their transformation and growth. Whereas in my case, I was fortunate and blessed enough to come from a family who was extremely loving, caring, and continues to be to this day together. And that instilled in me at a very early age, so much of what I feel I carry, in my content, in my message, and what I want to bring into the world. And then beyond that, I can't help but feel like it would be my greatest sin to take these blessings that I have received just through coincidence of birth, if you want to, you know, use that word. I'm not a big fan of coincidence, but I digress. It would be my greatest sin to not utilize those blessings and that fortune to help aid those who maybe can't say that they were as blessed or as fortunate, but who want to rise above their circumstances and overcome the challenges that they have had to face in their lives, right? But as far as my own personal genesis, I've always kind of been like this, I suppose. Like I would, you know, I remember being in kindergarten and I'd ask questions like, you know, if God created us, then what created God? And like, how big is the universe? Do we know this? And I'm young and I'm asking these questions, and it almost just kind of over time just changed as things do, evolved as things do, into this kind of perception of being in highest accordance with who you are capable of being, because in doing the work on yourself and becoming a fully actualized version of yourself, you fundamentally make the entire world a better place just by existing in it.
Yeah, you know, this is an area of thinking that there's a weird thing that maybe happens just with thinking in general. And there are two rough types when it comes to this, which is there are those who think about things at a shallow level. They sort of just like interface with that which they need to interface with and don't go more than a step or two beyond that. And then there are those who follow thoughts or groups of thoughts and see if they can trace them to the conclusion or as far out as they can manage to comprehend. And that second half of people is where I find myself and where you found yourself. You know, like as a kid too, I was thinking, okay, so I exist and maybe I don't exist, but I think I do. And I'm here. I'm going to take that one for a given. I exist. So existence exists.
Sure.
Okay. Did something make me? Well, I've been told that. Okay. So something made me, but what made that? I don't know. Chance. Yeah. Well, is heaven part of, is it like part of the thing, or is it outside, or is it like, is it layer? Is it, well, I don't know, Chance.
Right.
Then you go, well, what do you mean you don't know? Aren't you 60? And you kind of, it takes you aback and you go, well, I'm going to figure it out, you know?
And then, well, you can try, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing about it is, on the one hand, you have that. You have the sort of mental journey. And if you stop going on that journey, it becomes depressing. But sometimes in that journey, it's also depressing. When you have the realization, oh, I'm not – as far as the amount of stuff that goes is infinity. How important could I really be? But then, like you just talked about, you get to the point where you realize, how could it be anything but important? I mean, I am fundamentally
– right.
One – with everything around me. And when I move, things shift and they shift forever. You know, the universe is forever changed by your decisions. Now your decisions might not have that high of an amplitude. It might be just little stuff like this, but even those little vibrations affect everything cosmically forever. So it's like, okay,
absolutely.
The very real fundamental physical truth is that you shifted the course of the entire universe of all infinity every time you ever did anything. It's pretty important, regardless of how
important it's super important.
Your earthly frame, you know. So, I wonder if I was going to kick it back to you, just where do you think the roadblock is to sort of accepting that framework for so many people?
Sure. And I'll go ahead and kind of bring it back to what you just explained, which I agree with in a very fundamental way, in that sense that those tiny ripples, even if they're tiny, they still have an impact and an effect, right? And it's important that we acknowledge that, because that allows us to move forward as if those tiny ripples have an effect. And I just think that most of us kind of work under this pretense and or are blind to that fact, right? We think that we can do any little thing and it doesn't really matter, but the nature of nature is compounding change over time, little incremental shifts that eventually become mountainous ones, right? They become so significant that they impact the entire course of history, both naturally and for humankind. Relative to kind of that way of thinking, right? You mentioned how there's kind of those two groups, right? There's the people that stop at that surface level, and there's people that decide to go beyond. I think it's this natural cycle that happens when you begin to entertain the upper limits of what you're able to conceptualize. Right? Because there comes a point where you can't help but say, I don't know. And I can't go any further than that. There seems to be just this barrier that doesn't let me pass beyond. But to push up against that and to consistently push up against that is how we evolve and how we expand our understanding and our awareness. Because I think it starts with, you know what you know, or what you think you know, rather. Right? And then that isn't clicking for you. It's not working for you. Something's too limited. Something within your worldview isn't quite working in the way that you want to live your life. And then you kind of begin to expand out and you move to what you don't know until you eventually come up against that barrier and you begin to internalize that not only are there things that you don't know, but there are things that you don't know that you don't know. And you can never really touch those things. And in going out as macro as possible, ironically, brings you back to the micro, because you begin to think to yourself, I can speculate and I can conceptualize and I can ruminate on all of these different ideas, these different philosophies, these different ways of being, these different ways of thinking, these different ways of feeling and believing. But at the end of the day, I am just a slightly smarter primate that is hurtling on this very tiny rock with a bunch of other slightly smarter primates who really don't have any idea of what the fuck is going on. And so it's up to me to just be the best, slightly more intelligent primate that I can in the face of that great unknowing, right? So I find it interesting that as you continue to expand beyond that initial surface kind of thinking into that greater realm, that you almost internally come back into the smaller core of what it is that you are just capable of doing as a human being on this planet, in this time, with your fellow human beings.
So there's a lot in there right there.
No, of course.
One thing I just want to, there's a tool in here, and you sort of elucidated so much about it that I just want to like just be overt in talking about it, which is, if you draw a circle on a piece of paper, and at the top you imagine you're standing on it and it's a ball, and the top is like the zone. It's where your life is going the most right. Your finances are good. Your relationships are good. You're working hard. You're engaged. You're fascinated. You have the steps. And then you can imagine that there's a cycle and you fall, and certain things, if you take anything that you do and you go, I'm falling, I'm past the point of no return. This is what happens on my way to the bottom. This is what happens as I'm climbing the climb. I get to here. This is the hardest part. If I can, and then, oh, I'm back on top and I'm trying to keep my balance. And how can I keep my balance better? If you literally go through and take anything in your life and write down those steps, then you can recognize your behaviors for what they are and note the consistencies. And then instead of trying to delete that process, because you can't really, it's every, you know, everything is cyclical. What you can do is increase the repetitions back to the top so that you have, oh, I need to do these things on the way down. Well, here's a mental analog. I'm going to sit here and listen to a sad song and cry. And then I'm going to, think about nostalgic thoughts, and then I'm going to and cycle it back up. And then I guess in that sort of light too, there's this thing about the universe, which is that it plays by rules which make it condense back to chaos, or, you know, sort of static level heat death. So it's in the same sense that you do affect everything forever. It's also that if things don't keep shifting and interacting and creating that vibrational energy, it just collapses down into no energy. And so when you do things that are dissonant with the sort of frequencies of life, then you start to work against the things that are actually keeping the game running for as long as it can, you know, sort of like it's taking out players in the game instead of just seeing who can play the game the best. And I wonder,
sure,
there's plenty of options to play a dissonant part in this symphony. And I wonder sort of how you've learned to maybe recognize the differences in the way that you notice that something's going to be positive or negative or suboptimal, I guess, in your life, and how you sort
sure.
of look at navigating moral area or whatever. Like,
and I love your analogy of the circle in that sense, because I've never heard that before personally, and I think that's a very apt way of putting it, right? Because life is very cyclical, and we can continue to do the work and we continue to improve, but we're always going to go through that motion. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chance, but I believe relative to what you're saying, it's almost like going around the circle can become a skill in and of itself, and you can learn to do it more efficiently and more effectively as you grow, meaning that the bad things that happen to you, the dissonance that comes, can work in your favor, and or you can learn to utilize it to your benefit, in the sense that when you do inevitably come back onto the top of the circle, you're in a better place than you were when you left it, rather than in the same place. Is that fair? Is that correct in kind of the way the analogy works?
One finer point to add to that, because yeah, that's correct. Is that if you, like, let's say that somebody's success failure cycle takes a year. Okay. You know, like, doing great, and then you're not doing so great, and you know, it takes a full year to come back to I'm on top of the ball again. Mm-hmm. What if that person could shift that cycle to a month, or a week, or a day, or instantly? Oh, I feel this way. I feel this way. I feel this way. I enter this mental frame. I feel this sad thought. And now I know. Oh yeah, here's my reframe. My go-to. I'm back up, and here I am. I'm back. I'm totally good. I dealt with that. It's not going to hold me back. I'm moving forward. And by being conscious, you do. And then getting better at dealing with those specific things that you do over and over again, you can,
sure.
Yeah, you know, I said this thing. Okay, what am I going to do? This, I'm back. Okay, you know.
Okay, so, yeah. So I get it. So it's almost becoming more in tune or sensitive to those changes when they occur on a more and more minute level, so that they're not maybe as drastic or significant until, without your realization, until it's too late, so to speak, right? So instead of falling back and you're here on the circle, you only fall back to here, and then you realize, well, I'm starting to fall in the circle. What can I do to either bring myself back up, or if I am going to go down, how can I utilize that for growth and evolution, rather than just detriment, sadness, depression, anxiety, stress, however that manifests for you. Is that clear?
Yep.
Cool. Yeah. So yeah, man, I think it is a lot simpler than many people tend to make it. And I also think the best advice is the advice that is almost tried and true, right? First of all, almost all of us have to go through some form of suffering. And just because of my upbringing and what I consider such significant blessings, that obviously doesn't mean that my life has been completely void of struggle. You cannot exist on this planet as a human being and not struggle in some capacity, in some way, shape, or form. And I think every single one of us has to go through, at least to some degree, struggle where it just completely overwhelms us. Where I like to use this comparison of drowning under the waters instead of learning to float above them, right? And I think the problem for so many is that they never learn to float above waters. Every challenge that presents itself, they just drown and drown and drown until the waters themselves decrease to the point where they have air, but they never learn to swim. They never learn to create a boat. They never learn to navigate. They just drown when it comes. And that is what perpetuates those cycles of depression and stress and anxiety and hardship and that mental attitude of, oh, woe is me. Why is this happening to me? Why am I so unfortunate? Why am I so unlucky? And then it's a vicious cycle that can be very difficult for many of us to escape. But I think the way that we choose to perceive, and I'll never forget this, right? And for me, which looking back seems so, I don't want to say irrelevant because it's not, but so kind of childish because it was that, was I went through a terrible breakup, you know, in high school. And again, that's such a childish struggle, but something we all go through. Men and women both experience kind of that first initial heartbreak, and that really teaches you some powerful lessons that serve you well in the future. But I'm sitting on my floor, and in no shame admitting this, crying because I had my identity wrapped up in this relationship, and I suddenly just got the rug pulled out from who I thought I was, and I had to reinvent. And that's a painful process. But I remember sitting there, tears from the depression and the sadness, and I thought to myself, I'm grateful for this. I am grateful that I'm going through this pain and this hardship and this challenge, because I will be able to utilize it for my future selves' growth and benefit and evolution. And that moment changed me forever, because it allowed me to find, in a kind of a, how do I put this, beaten to death phrasing, the silver lining in the cloud, right? And now I can always find the silver lining in the cloud. And I realize that some hardship is is worse than others. There are people that are experiencing things that are infinitely tougher than a simple breakup, right? But I think it's just so important that when we do experience problems in our lives, hardship in our lives, no matter how terrible they might be, we allow ourselves the time to feel the emotions that we need to feel, the anger, the grief, the stress. But we also acknowledge that we can utilize those emotions, that energy, to channel it into something more, something greater, right? And that's when you get people who go through accidents that paralyze them, or some form of sexual trauma or physical trauma or emotional and mental trauma. And then they, you know, create a nonprofit organization that helps others in the hopes that they'll never have to experience what they did. That was a way that they were able to take what happened to them and make it into something that is now beneficial to the rest of the world and reflective of their growth as an individual and their willingness to share something that was once painful, probably will always be painful, but it doesn't own them anymore. They found a way to channel it and own it.
Yeah, you know, there's this process, and you have to kind of go through it no matter who you are, that just you have to feel the feels that you feel, you know.
Absolutely.
Something comes into your life and it's painful. It is painful. You know, there's not, it's like, it just is what it is. And how are you going to deal with that? You're going to try to like squish out the pain and not deal with it. Why does it hurt? It's just a physical thing that you need to learn. You know, those, just like the physical pain is a response, emotional pain is a response that contains a message and a lesson in it. And you have to unpack it no matter how, like, you know, hot it is to touch. It's like, well, too bad, you know, like put some oven mitts on and let's get this done. And
right.
The longer you don't, you know, it kind of, those things can fester and they can be like a glioma cancer that just sends out tendrils all over the place and touch other things, start sapping energy and bringing them closer and just wrapping them up into poison. Cause it's like, this is a problem that you have. And if you don't deal with your problem, it's going to grow and it's going to create more problems, deficiency. Yeah. Deficiency, stumble, broken connection. Now you're in a place where you could have been here. You can never be there. You can go this way and it can still mm-hmm. rise high, but that option is closed to you now because you didn't deal with it. How long are you going to let that process continue before you deal with it? Are you going to die? Because it will really literally kill you if it's a significant enough problem, whether it kills your finances or your health.
Absolutely.
Or whatever. It'll take you out or you'll take yourself out. So what's it going to be? Mm-hmm. But the problem is, and here's where I think a lot of people stumble, is just that the longer you don't deal with it, the more, at least subconsciously, you realize there's all these sort of negative actions that you've taken that are stacked on top of that thing that you could have dealt with all along. And in order to deal with it now, you have to take responsibility for all this nasty shit that you've done to the world. And so sometimes you just don't, and you just, well, maybe I just deserve to go down this path now because I chose to for so long. And it's like, nah, man, you think the negative consequences or the negative actions you've taken stop right now just because you saw them? You have to make a change even right now, even if it's heavy all the time. You realized it and it's your responsibility to do something about it. So I wonder, man, I like, you know, a lot of people, or some people at least, a significant portion, they hear a story like yours where it's like, I've had a great life, man. I'm just really grateful for it. And I want to share that with other people. They go, oh, well, what should I learn from you? You haven't been to AA talking about, like, you know, doing dirty deeds for drugs. It's like, well, absolutely. Hey, some people, like I always tell people, it's like, just some people don't require being an idiot to learn a lesson. They just go, oh, well, that right. seems to be a great thing. And that's wrong. And I'm not going to do that. You know, that doesn't work for me. And I wonder, maybe just to kind of kick it back to you from this frame is just, what do you think can be done to maybe guide people into a more prepared state for addressing those things early rather than kicking the can down the road with their sort of emotional processing that needs to be done?
Sure. Well, I think first has to come awareness and acknowledgement of what is the problem that you have, right? Where is its root? Okay. Like what experience has it come from? what information have you internalized that has come from? And sometimes that's a difficult thing for people to figure out. And sometimes it's not any one thing. It can be a multitude of events, experiences, things told, things believed that can kind of culminate into this problem or issue. But I think it's important to get as clear as we possibly can on identifying how that exists in us. And then from there, learning how you're feeding it on a subconscious or conscious level. And then this comes back to kind of that realm of thinking, right? How do I put this? Like, let's say you grew up in a home where your parents were extremely adamant that you did well in school, right? And anything under an A was the worst thing in the world for them, right? They would punish you, they ground you, whatever it might be. And so now you go through life hyper-analyzing every single one of your mistakes and thinking that if you're not achieving absolute excellence, you're a failure, right? So where's the root of the problem? That constant pattern and enforcing of that fact, right? Or that, I wouldn't say fact, but what your parents have instilled within you, that if you're not achieving excellence, you're a failure. If you're not on one end of the spectrum, you're all the way on the other. But then how do you grow up feeding that mentally and emotionally? So let's say, you know, you grow up and you still hold this disposition that has been instilled in you, and you think to yourself, gosh, you're such a fucking idiot for XYZ, or I can't believe you just did this, or how could you, whatever it is. You are now the one perpetuating the problem, right? It isn't so much the problem anymore, but now that you have that conscious awareness of having growth and understanding, you are now giving it power. And I think this is where so many people fall short, is they don't even realize they do that. They don't realize that their mental patterns, their emotional patterns are what is not only feeding the problem, but making it continuous in their lives. And if we were to just take a minute to change the way that we frame, and this is one of the very first things I do with almost every single one of my clients, is I ask, what is your self-talk like, and how is it perpetuating a negative kind of experience of life in any area? And then how can we remove its power without fully removing the thought? Because I'm a big proponent of, like, you know, if you try, and this isn't always true, you know, but if you try to if you try to completely eliminate something from your life, there's going to become a vacuum, and that vacuum has to be filled. And if you don't have a means of kind of gradual shifting, it will almost always be filled with either the same thing, it'll just come back, or something else in the same kind of lane as that same thing. So it's like, if you completely tried to cold turkey cigarettes, you're probably going to find a vice that is also harmful to you. Now, again, that's not always the case, but more often than not, I think it's much better to, instead of smoking a cigarette, I'm going to go walk for 5 or 10 minutes, right? Like, gradually changing what that space is filled with. Now, in the sense of, like, the negative thought pattern relative to our example, you know, say you make a super nominal mistake, right? And you think to yourself, I'm such an idiot. And then you tack on to the end of that thought, but I'm working on getting over that perception, or I am overcoming how hard I am on myself, right? You have that thought, you allow yourself to still have that, to play that negative tape, but you take away its power by adding just a few more words of language at the end of it. And what will happen if you consistently do this over time, the first part of the sentence will completely fade away from your self-talk, and you are suddenly not as hard on yourself as you once were. Right? And this, I think, applies to everyone and everything. We all have these perpetuating thought patterns that arise from triggers in our environment, from triggers internally via emotion, that run us in the way that we act. And then the way that we act almost always feeds into these patterns. And once we realize this, once we become aware, like, hey, maybe I am the one perpetuating this, and I'm working more on automatic tapes rather than conscious decision-making, conscious thinking, conscious feeling, which is much harder to do, but possible. That's when real growth can occur, because you've taken the blinders away and you have moved out of the perception of life sucks and it continues to suck and I have no power over that, to aspects of my life suck because of things that I do on a daily basis. And then you take the power away from the first perception into a much healthier perception that you are able to work with and expand upon.
So, excuse me.
Of course.
There's a lot in there that I really resonate with, and a lot of what I teach is also in there too. Because, you know, there's a simple way of sort of looking. You were talking about keeping your head above water, or just like draining the water to where your head just was above water. It's like, okay,
right.
Environment is the water, sort of. It's like,
yes,
to a certain extent, and then you're the swimmer, and you know, you can enter an environment where there's just very little stress. But then you might also be in a sterile box with just a little bit of water around your feet. It depends. You might be on a beach, but even paradise has its problems, and it gets pretty boring to just sit on a beach.
Oh, I love that. It's a great analogy. I love that.
But you know, what if you're in the ocean and there's sharks in the water and you have to learn to swim and look out for the signs and do what you can, you know, prepare yourself. Well, that's being skilled, you know, and another way of sort of looking at the same analogy is that you have your flaws and you have your strengths, or you have your weaknesses as far as a survival and a thriving capacity, and you have your strengths in that matter too. And your strengths are swimming and your flaws are the water. And it's just like, can you stay above water? And can you actually just, can you be like a dolphin and jump up out of the water and fly right free before you hit? So when we take all that, then let me tack on another thing here, because I'm going to point to some stuff here is, okay, sure. So you have that sort of approach to life that you need to enter these paradigms where you can swim in any water, even through a storm, you stay above water. Or if you dip, you know, it's just for a second.
Right.
Okay. Then you think about, okay, what are the areas in my life? What are the problems? Where do they come from? What are they connected to? So you have intel coming into that. And then you have, well, what do I do about this intel? How do I sort it? How do I categorize it? How do I prioritize? And finally, how do I confront these things that I need to, or process these things that I need to? And then you go, okay, well, I've done all these things in my head and maybe I've used some visualization tools, but how do I reach out and grab all this stuff and bring it, collapse it into a thing that's concrete? And you have to start doing writing. And it's best even to, when you're thinking through these things, to have a pen and a pad on, or, you know, whatever, but draw or doodle or whatever, and just let your hands be busy doing something while you think through thoughts, but writing especially, because then you have it. You know, you could doodle something and it's a cool picture and people look at it and they go, what the fuck were you thinking? And you go, well, I was just drawing, you know. But then if you write it, you go, hey, look at this. I have some principles here for you and I want to teach them to you. You mind if I teach principles? Hey, all right, here's some principles. Or you can kind of obliquely bring it in and say, hey, you know, here's a story about a guy who did a thing. Just think about it. And they go, what? Oh,
so right. let's play devil's advocate a little bit, because I completely agree with you. But let's say you have listeners right now that are like, well, I don't write. And then they completely disregard. You are not, you don't get a pass here. Because I think it's beyond just the writing aspect of it, which is, again, important. But I think the most important part of that is the crystallization of thoughts and transferring them out of your mind and into some tangible thing that you can then do reflection on. For many, that's writing, journaling, which is an excellent way of expression. But now we live in an age where you can take voice notes, you can paint pictures, draw, which obviously that's been around for quite a while, but I digress. You can take video video diaries if you want. You can share them with people. You can keep them to yourselves. But I think fundamentally it's so important to get these things out of your head and onto some type of platform, or to something that it can hold within, because that allows you to look at it in a linear way. And having the ability to look at those things in a more linear way allows us to begin to connect the dots between them. I think the problem with thoughts is that they're so, forgive my woo-woo kind of expression, but quantum in nature, in the sense that they pop in and then they pop out, right? They're here and then they're gone. And then you don't have enough time in between that space to connect thoughts in any one way, and you don't have enough time to kind of reflect on any given thing. So they're just constantly popping in and out of your mind without you being able to really latch on or catch them. And that's why recording is so fundamentally important that everyone should do in some capacity, because it allows you to catch the thought. And even if it's just one word or one short sentence, you can then reflect on that and think in a kind of meta way on that thought to expand its nature. And that's all writing is. That's all reflection is, right? It's just kind of peeling back all of the different layers to something and finding a creative way to do that. No matter who you are or what you do, no matter if you put it out as art or if you keep it to yourself, is just completely fundamental, I think, to living a fully realized life that you can be proud to live in. And I'm going to go ahead and bring it back to the waters, right? One of my favorite quotes, and I'm probably going to lose a little bit of credibility from some people on this one, but you know, those people aren't really all that fun. But in the movie Doctor Strange, which I'm hoping you've seen, awesome. So the ancient one in that, right? She's with one of her disciples, and he says, "You taught me how to expel my demons, get rid of my demons." And she says, "We never learn to expel our demons or get rid of our demons. We only learn to live above them." And I don't know if they ripped that from something, or if it was, you know, created just for the movie. But I think that just resonated so powerfully with me, because it's so abundantly true. You cannot separate from the experiences and the memories and the past that has happened, because it's a part of you. It's one layer that is into you, but it's a kind of rot that you can learn to contain so that it doesn't spread to the layers that build upon it. Right. And then it becomes this kind of thing that you accept is within you and realize that it doesn't make you any less, because you have so much time and so much life forward in order to build over that, upon that, without really hiding it, but just accepting that it is what it is, and learning to come to terms with it.
Hmm. So when I was listening to you, I was thinking, number one, about, like, have you ever seen the exhibits where they've sent like plastic into the different parts of the humans, and they have the, you know, like the nervous system or the lung or the cardiovascular
system? Yes. Yep.
So you have these different ways of sort of stretching out what you're looking at. I mean, because, for example, you could look at planet Earth just from like the million foot view, and you can say, okay, it's just a planet. It's just like a ball, and it has some blue and green and brown and some white stuff that moves around. Okay. And that's true. I mean, that is what it is in that frame of reference. Then you zoom in, it's like, oh, well, there's texture to this. And you zoom in, and oh, well, there's all these different things. And that green stuff is actually life. And it's actually all these different things. And okay, now we're, you know, and then this is the way that these relationships all interact on this scale and on this scale and on this scale. And then you come down and you got an atom, and then the atom blows up too. So you have these different ways of expanding what you're looking at. And then you have the temporal aspect too. Well, it isn't just this ball now. It was dust, and then it went like this, and then it crashed down. And then pretty soon the sun's going to come over here and eat it, and it's going to just, you know, disperse again. So you have this temporal aspect. And there's psychological ones too that you can sort of pull out and look at emotional chains of events and stuff like this. So you have the ability to do this almost in like a hologram, that you can sort of angle and look at these different motions, and then you can move it back and forth in your mind and watch it play out.
Yes.
But then you also have the fact that you could do that forever about one thing and never learn everything there is to know about one action, but your life moves in a direction, you know, in like not a unidirectional, but an omnidirectional flow that you have to kind of sort through. So you have to go, okay, what experiences do I resonate with, and how can I have more of those so that I feel more harmonic with my existence? And you start to look at this stuff. And so you have to go, okay, if this, then what? What do I look at? What do I blow up? What is the best to even look at here? And so you have to sort of map it out. And that's another reason why I really recommend writing or recording of any sort, like you said, is just because, okay, what if this pattern is a once in every 2-year pattern. And you totally forget about it. And then it just sort of comes up, but you've never dealt with it. You don't have any tools to deal with it. And it continues to happen every 2 years. And it sets you back a whole bunch. Or it moves you forward a whole bunch, and you could really amplify it either way. If you don't have that, if you don't have that process and habit of exploring the things that happened to you and tracing back the roots and looking at what to look for, so you have a system, a systematic way of addressing everything eventually. And then you, you know, my personal viewpoint, just to kind of sort of round this out and kick it back to you, is just the idea that, you know, you talked about at the beginning how you want to sort of embody the highest version of yourself. And that's sort of the goal of this transformational process. And I think that that is a sacred process. That's sort of the whole idea behind the traditional sacred practice, is that these are the tools that allow you the psychological framework to operate within, that allows you to go through that, you know, sort of ascensional process.
Yes.
So it's my contention that the more that you systematize these things and look at what to look at and then do look at, that's part of your personal sacred practice, which is your responsibility to try to make every moment in your life personal sacred practice, because then your whole life and everything in it is viewed as sacred. And that actually means something to you, and it gives you the ability to approach things with the correct attitude, which is, this is eternal and important, and I'm the arbiter of the future, and that's a huge responsibility, and I need to be the kind of person who can handle it as best as I can. And so I guess, just to kick it back to you, I wonder how much, you know, you talked about it would be my greatest sin to take for granted all the blessings I've been given. And I wonder just maybe how you look at the process of this growth through the lens of discipline and responsibility, and that sort of, you know, you don't get stronger without carrying weight.
Right.
Kind of. And I wonder how you sort of look at the responsibility aspect to carrying that weight, and how sure. might view that if you were to stretch that one out.
Sure. So, and I couldn't agree more with what you're saying, Chance. Like I think that's such a great way to kind of start. In the sense that reality, your experience of reality, your perception, or your experience of reality and the way that you view it and understand it matches the way that you perceive it. In the sense that if you are, you know, a million miles out from the planet, looking at it from that perspective, you are going to have a vastly different experience of reality than if you're on the planet looking at its people and its life and its cultures and the way that it operates and moves on a smaller level. It is completely going to be completely different. It's going to be absolutely night and day. And this applies on the micro level as well. What you choose to focus your attention on is what you get back in your experience of reality. And I think it comes down to just a few core things. Focus plus intention plus action is what creates your experience. What is it that you're focusing on your daily life? Are you focusing on all of the terrible things that are happening to you, all the little wrongs, complaining all the time, not expressing gratitude, not navigating and figuring out your strengths and your weaknesses, how you can share, how you can increase those strengths, mitigate for those weaknesses? Because you're going to experience more of that, because you are subconsciously directing yourself towards more of that. So when it comes to the discipline aspect of it, it does begin so, I think, fundamentally in the mind. But a lot of us, I think, have a problem getting to that part of it because of where our emotions are. And I think one thing I want to tell everybody is that I don't think there is so much negative and positive emotion as much as there is negative and positive charges to emotion, right? Because we can experience what is generally considered a negative emotion, but with a positive charge to it, in the sense that I might be angry that I lost, let's say, in a competition with somebody, but that doesn't mean I'm angry at the person that I lost to. My anger is fueling me to be better, not to take away what they have accomplished for themselves, right? So it's what is generally considered a negative emotion tied to a positive charge. Same thing with traditionally considered positive emotions with a negative charge. If I get pleasure out of hurting other people, right? It's what is traditionally considered positive emotion, but fueled by a negative charge. And I think it's so important to recognize how our feelings are incorporated, because thought is the seed that branches out to the tree that is your life. But human beings are fundamentally more emotional than we are rational. And so many of us, I think, are clouded in our rational judgment because of where our emotional judgment is tied to, right? And the reason I'm kind of bringing that all to the forefront is, I think the first discipline to cultivate is, how are you feeling on a daily basis and why? What rational types of thinking are you perpetuating that is causing you to feel certain ways? And what behaviors are you perpetuating that is causing you to feel certain ways? And really get clear on those and be hard on yourself in them. Figure out what detrimental things you are doing that is consistently causing you hardship outside of your more core problems. Because that's the only way that you're going to be able to get to those core problems. Right? You have to almost work, I think, from the outside in. Whereas most people, I think, try to work from the inside out, right? It's like, okay, say I experienced this terrible thing in my youth, and it's really fucked up my whole experience of life from that point. It's like, okay, well, that's a very real problem and something that you need to get over. But what is your diet like? What is your sleep schedule like? What is your exercise like? Are you drinking enough water? Are you eating the right foods? Are you tracking your energy, the way that you're spending your time? Are you analyzing these more kind of outside things that maybe seem so minuscule in relation to the core problem, but you have to tackle those first before you can get to the depth of what it is that you are dealing with?
So,
I have to carry you for a second because my computer's about to die and I want to grab a charger. But continue, please.
I like to look at this maybe just a little bit tweaked from where you've looked at this.
By all means, please.
Let's imagine you have your rational thinking and your sort of emotional thinking, or your let's call it metaphorical thinking rather.
Sure.
Because that's where sort of the emotions really live more in is sort of a realm of metaphor, you know, because the emotion anger has so much visceral effect in addition to all the cognitive stuff that comes along with it when you experience that.
Yes, it's in any emotion, I think, in a strong order, is extremely visceral. It's very physical in the way that it manifests.
That's right. And I like to think of it like this. You have, let's say you have like a turning wheel on either of them. Sometimes they're going in opposite directions. Sometimes they're going the same. Sometimes one's going fast. Sometimes one is just pegged and stuck at a place, you know. And that's sort of the turning of your logical cycles and your emotional cycles. And there's also exchange that happens sometimes between those two things. You know, you got the bicameral mind, but you communicate across and it causes things to happen. So what you're talking about, looking at the inputs affect outputs, but outputs affect inputs. It's a bidirectional yes. communication. But then the thing is, once you realize that it is a bidirectional communication, that's not the highest level that you can operate at, because once you realize I've got the emotion, I've got the logic, and neither one of them is a complete picture of my existence. The logical side might be able to spell out the nature of the physical existence, but the emotional side or the metaphorical side is the communication interface that I have with it that allows me to do certain things. You know, like I don't operate at a subatomic level. I operate at this chance as a person level. And a lot of that right. is just think about things. And so I have to understand how to shift what I think in order to interface with what is actual. And then that is my path and my existence. And so, like you talked about laying it out in a linear fashion, that's what a story is for, is to put things in a row and look at them stretched out in a way that makes sense so that you can learn where to intervene or to amplify whatever it is that's come along in this you know, this like thread of story before, so that when you're weaving your own tapestry, you know just where to put it and the quality of the thread and what to do. And it's, it's this tapestry that just continues to unravel behind you, and you continue to build, and hopefully you keep building faster than it unravels, and eventually you don't. But it could be beautiful along the way, or it could be a haggard, bloody fucking mess.
Right. And I don't mean to interrupt, but I'd like to add, isn't that all stories are in the first place, and any expression of art in the first place? It's a way that we are able to translate emotion for understanding when it comes to the rational mind, right? So a way for us to perceive and understand how that emotion is influenced, because like you said, it's very metaphorical and it's much more etheric in nature. And through stories, the ones that we tell ourselves, the ones that we express to others, that's how we condense it and almost transmute it into something that our rational mind can process and grasp.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll just wrap it up with a couple of thoughts on it. That process is very real. Maybe some of the things you tell yourself are not real in the sense that they exist in the physical universe, but they are true in the sense that when you do them, they get you to a certain place that you were trying to go.
Absolutely.
You know, that's how that sort of thing works. That's why you could read the statistics on, let's say, you could read the statistics of crime in a city, and you could say, wow, there were 1,000 murders in Chicago last year. Or you could have a book with 1,000 life stories in it that ended in Chicago that year and read through all the triumphs and tragedies that got cut short. And then you go, well, okay, what really affected me more? The fact that there were 1,000 murders or 1,000 people's life stories? And it's like, well, duh. But right. The point is, though, is that some of those stories can be faulty. It has to be an interface. And then when they're harmonized, you know, you're using true metaphor and you're using actual facts, and those things are in alignment with each other. That's when, instead of just two different wheels doing whatever, they're spinning the same and they're connected. You know, they have this thread of energy that's cycling through them. And then when you're like that, when you're like that as a person, it's a different way of existing in the world. You say, I'm here. I'm a processing unit of existence. It comes to me and I'm a Venturi, and it goes out past me, behind me, and I just go through it and navigate because I can handle my business. And when you feel like that, the whole world opens up to you. You say, I can do anything I want to within certain conditions. I'm not even sure I know where the limits are, because things amplify. And you have that stochastic resonance that Nassim Taleb talks about. It's like, okay, it's seemingly random, but when you operate in certain ways, those random things hit each other and explode with more energy, and it goes in an upward trend. As long as you do things that follow that stochastic resonance upwards,
right, and
trend downwards. So pay attention, because it is going to seem random, but there's a pattern. There's an underlying pattern that's deeper than you think. If you just watch carefully, you can see some of the things, and you only have to really see a couple of them. To be honest, you don't have that many actions in a day. If you do a couple high energetic return things, bing, 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 I feel fucking great, man. So yeah,
absolutely,
I guess.
Absolutely, man. That's what it is. It's what it is. And, you know, that harkens back to the way that I like to verbalize it, which is that, like, that synergetic state of being, right? When the intention of your mind, your body, and your emotional state are all harmonized together. And you can learn to make that your base level of existence. And when one kind of gets faulty and weird, the other two can compensate, right? For me personally, when I am like a little bit more emotionally charged than I maybe would like to be, I move into the power of my body and I go exercise, or I go run, or I go swim, or I do something that gets me out of here and here and more into just other parts. It disperses it. Right. And I think when you learn to utilize those three aspects of self in tandem with one another, realizing that they're all just parts to the same whole, and like you said, the spinning wheels, and if one is pegged and stuck in one place, it's infinitely going to influence the way the other two wheels turn. But when you get them harmonized together, and when you learn to consciously direct each one, that's when you can get this kind of baseline state of existence that not only are you fundamentally, I don't want to use the word happier, because I think happiness is something that people should get away from chasing, but you feel more fulfilled and whole, right? And you are able to take what comes, good or bad, and recognize either the beauty of it in the goodness of it, or the beauty in it in the hardship of it. And that allows you to just exist so much more simply in a way, and just so much more peacefully, that allows you the tools and the resources internally to deal with what comes, no matter how hard it might be. And even if it is extremely difficult, say the loss of a dear loved one, you are going to go through such terrible, terrible feelings and thoughts and experiences, but at least you kind of have that bedrock foundation of, I can learn from this, grow from this. And it may not be now, it may not be years from now, but eventually it will occur, and I will be better for having experienced this pain. And when that begins to seep into your problems, no matter what they look like, you cannot be taken down, right? You have this kind of internal strength that will always carry you forward. It's just something that we all have to learn to cultivate. And that when we do learn to cultivate, we begin to happen to life rather than the other way around.
Within certain limits, you know.
Sure, of course.
There are wavelengths that are well beyond our ability to intervene upon.
Yeah, nobody go, you know, believe you can fly and jump off a roof, because you're gonna have a terrible time if you go do that.
As I was listening to you, I had one of those sort of flash visualizations, and I was thinking about this process. It's like, imagine, have you ever watched The Price is Right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the game Plinko?
You
dropped a little disc and it bounces around on the pegs.
Yes. Yep.
Life is sort of like turning the Plinko thing upside down, and you are one of those discs, and you're trying to actually bounce up the pegs to go through one of the money holes.
Interesting.
If you fall, you know, you might peg your way back down, and then you gain your attention. Maybe peg your way back down is not the best language to communicate.
Nah, that's all good. I know what you mean.
But, you know, it's just sort of, it seems random until you learn the process, but it's still hard. You know, you have to anticipate and be agile and deal with stuff as it happens. You know, you hit the wrong peg, you might veer off in the wrong direction. You're going to have to learn how to deal with that.
Right.
And that's one of those tools. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the term OODA loop, but you know, it's sort of a way of dealing with processing decisions in real time and increasing your speed that you go through that necessary thing. I guess I'm tying it right back to that previous principle.
Sure. And no, I was not familiar with that term. That sounds very interesting.
It is. It's cool. But sometimes it can be tricky to understand how to implement it practically. Besides like analysis. But I guess to maybe kick it back at you again is, what are some tools specifically, maybe less principally, but specifically, that you use in your own life to, number one, set yourself up to stay on track, and then number two, to kick yourself back over from one of those errant pegs that you whacked into on your way to the, you know, the payout.
Sure, absolutely. So, I'm a huge proponent for starting with the baseline stuff, right? That kind of stuff that has to deal solely with our physical survival, because it really has so much more to do with our physical survival. It's all about our mental and emotional well-being as well. But the simple things, right? Getting those in order first. What are your sleep patterns like? Are they consistent? Are they deep and restful? What are your physical patterns like when it comes to exercise? Are you getting any, right? Are you getting out in the sun? Are you taking time to decompress and allow yourself the ability to relax, right? Which is a whole other topic when it comes to like our hyper, almost entrepreneurial culture that is kind of developing, and hustle hard every single day, all day, every day, right? But I digress. Your diet, you know, what are you bringing into your body that affects your physical chemistry, which inevitably is going to impact your emotional chemistry, right? And your mental chemistry in the way that you think and feel. How much reflection are you doing in the form of journaling or writing or recording in any capacity? Do you have some form of creative outlet that you give yourself to in some way, shape, or form? Because I think human beings are meant to be creators. We fundamentally are creators. If you give humans a bunch of trees, we're going to make a house out of those trees. We're going to build fires out of those trees. We're going to find ways to utilize the resources around us and to create with them. It's what we're naturally predisposed to do? And are you allowing yourself the ability to do that in some way, shape, or form? I'm a big proponent of, and this is a little bit more, I don't want to say advanced, but maybe more intricate, right? Like if I'm going to give anybody any advice, if you're bare bones beginner, figure out your diet, figure out your sleeping, figure out your exercise, figure out your reflective process, like any way that you can record and translate your thoughts. That's where you want to start. I love personally like time tracking. There's plenty of apps that you can use. I use one or had used one called A-Tracker, but I'm looking at another one currently called Life Cycle. I believe it's on Android and iOS. Allows you to see where you are putting your time and your energy. It's a means through which you can reflect on your mood through any given day. And it's a very, very visible way of seeing how you're spending your most valuable currency, being your time. Right. And then in our modern world, what is your digital environment like? You know, is your phone chaotic and a mess, or do you have it cleaned up and orderly and organized, especially if you're a creator, right? Are you optimizing your ability to be productive and not distracted? What are you consuming as far as information is concerned? Are you reading about all of the problems in the world constantly, all of the time, no matter how minute they are, because that's how you're going to learn to perceive the world. Right. And these are all little things and seemingly insignificant to our greater problems. But I think they serve as the foundation that allows us to elevate ourselves into this more observational frame of thinking. Right. And I'll like harken back to your Plinko. Or is it Plinko or Planko?
I think it's Plinko.
OK. Yeah. The Plinko analogy. Right. It's instead of being the disc falling through the pegs and being like, oh man, I'm this disc falling through all these pegs, I have no control. You learn to observe the whole thing. And instead of relating to the disc, you relate to the one watching the disc. And I think we all have that kind of persona within us, in the sense that there's the one that presents itself to the world. There's the one that internalizes everything through thought and feeling, is there's the omnipresent observer that kind of watches it all happen. And the more that you're able to get into that observer and kind of see yourself from almost a bird's eye view, that's how you begin, I think, to dictate your life in a higher accordance and to get to this place that is fundamentally better than if you are just relating to that internal dialogue, thought, and feeling.
You know, that traditional framework that's so useful about thinking about sort of, you know, mind, body, emotion, mind, body, spirit, these kinds of things. I've been in a place where I've been visualizing a lot in this conversation, and I think of Christopher Langen, who's supposed to be the man with the highest IQ in North America, something like around 200 or something like this.
Right.
He has this theory called the CTMU, which is basically the idea that there's this underlying, like the underlying ether or whatever of existence is this CTMU, which is a self-perpetuating, self-organizing, perfectly expressive language of existence. And so, you know, when you talk about, say, emotions, let's call them the verbs of the CTMU, for lack of a better comparison. And they come in and they have literal physical changes to the aspect of the universe that they're interfacing with, because they're like a word that has an effect, where they're a type effect. And like you said, your chemistry, that's another bi-directional communication there, because, you know, you have your body and your thoughts inform your body and what to do, but then the inputs also inform what your body has to work with and the tendencies and the trends. And so as I've been thinking and listening and just sort of spending time in that headspace, I find myself just sort of coming back to the same things over and over again in this conversation, which is the cycles and the bidirectional communication and the amplification of certain stuff. And I wonder if there's a language, right? If there's a universal language where do you stand on sort of what is it that's speaking that language, or, you know, like who?
Sure. So you want to get more into the kind of deeper underlying aspects of reality, so to speak? Is that kind of where you're at with that? Because I'm down to go down that.
Yeah, I just kind of, I've been spending a lot of headspace in that conversation there. I figured why not kind of pull it out.
Sure. So obviously this is going to go into like, you know, personal beliefs and philosophies and things of that nature. So if you're listening, take what you will, whatever you feel you can utilize to better your life. And if it doesn't resonate with you, then so be it, you know? I am a proponent for the idea that consciousness is probably what predicates matter rather than matter being what predicates consciousness. And the reason that I think that is because things are so orderly in a way that I guess randomness put into a vacuum with a limitless number of iterations could generate. But I think the likelihood of that is sparse. And this comes to my perception of macro micro. You know, if you look at the solar system and the way that our planets work, it's very much atomical in nature, right? And I don't perceive life being able to come from non-life, right? And everything to some degree has awareness, even rocks, you know, even inanimate objects, because on lower levels, they're moving, they're vibrating, they are waves, they're light, refractions of that are appearing to us as physical, right? And then this, you know, gets into the kind of upper realms, kind of that barrier that we discussed earlier, to where your thinking kind of breaks down and you can't go much further. But I find that operating under that pretense, in the sense that there's this kind of field that exists, and maybe that we are just channels for that field, right? And receptors for that field. And okay, so like, I'll give you one of my favorite, I don't know if you could really even call it theory, maybe hypotheses of how maybe the mind operates, more like the lungs, in the sense that oxygen is everywhere and all around us, right? The only oxygen that we utilize is the air that we breathe in, the oxygen that we breathe in. And then it goes through our bodies and transforms into another substance and then gets expelled as that other substance. Well, what if our brains are very much an organ in that same way, right? This kind of whatever it is, this mind, this field, this energy is all around us. And it's moving through our brains, absorbed by our brains, we think, which is the transforming of one substance into another, and then that thought is expelled back into the field as something new. And that's how we are able to create. That's how we're able to look at other people's art, other people's manifestations of their mental and emotional processes, internalize it as inspiration, and then completely put something brand new into the world and advance upon that which came before, right? And I think operating under this perception can be very powerful because it fundamentally ties the mental and emotional processes internally into the experience externally. And again, this all kind of like links back to everything that we've discussed previously, is that the way that you think about the world and your life and reality very much determines the way that you experience. And then the input that you get from that experience determines the way that you think and feel. And it's very cyclical. And so for people who are in those traps of that mental and emotional turmoil, getting that feedback constantly from the external, it's a hard cycle to get out of. I will never say that it's not, because it's very difficult. But when you're able to just slightly put a crack in that cycle by changing a certain thought pattern or a certain emotional pattern, that's when you begin to break out. And then you notice that slight change that resonates external from that change that happens internal. That's why, again, like if anyone's going to impart any one lesson from our conversation today, I think it should always be, and I'll say this on every single podcast that I'm on or any interview that I'm on, is that we are fundamentally creators all of the time. We are consistently creating the way that we experience ourselves, our reality, and the way that we interpret any input, internal or external. And it's either conscious or unconscious, right? And the more that you can move it from that unconscious plane into that conscious plane, you'll never be able to do it fully, right? I mean, it's and possibly you can, but that's not even, I think, necessary to do it fully. Nor would it be fun to do it fully, because then you'd have all the answers and what's the point of growth at that point? The more you are able to manifest what is in line with, again, your ideals as they relate to self and experience of life.
You know, there's a lot of helpful ways of looking at stuff like this. You know, for example, you can think of maybe a lot of what you described there is sort of like you have a computer that has hardware and that's your body, and you have software and that's sort of the ideas that you've installed. And then you have the interface, which is like it's the observer part of you that, but it's like breaking through a little bit, but it's awkward, you know, like the pure observer then has to translate through this body, and you have the keyboard and the mouse, or you have a controller. There's different ways of interfacing. And right. I think what people get hung up on is problems at the interface level. You know, they say, well, life's not fair, or things should be different, or there's not enough, or it's like, well, no, you just like, I just don't think you understand how to use your keyboard, man, because there's far more possibility within this interface that you have here, within this hardware and software frame, and at this interface, just like, because some people, after a little bit of knowledge, they've been able to create the entire world you live in with that interface. I mean, in a very literal, but you know, that's always been the case. The pyramids exist, dude. You know, Göbekli Tepe was buried 12,000 years ago. Who knows how long, you know, people built this with their hands and stuff. There's these things all throughout time, the cathedrals, just even being Leonardo da Vinci is like, even if you could be 10% as productive as that guy, you'd still have accomplished more than almost anybody. Okay. So look, dude, it's not like maybe your keyboard's missing a few keys. You're still going to be able to type most of the words, you know,
right.
It's like, come on, man, unless you're stuck. And I wonder, and like, we've been going for a while and there's a lot in here, and we kind of out for where people are going to run into that and go, I don't know. So let me maybe frame this a little bit and kick it back to you for some final thoughts and stuff. And we can kind of draw this to a close, but you know, we kind of started with here's some ways that we approach life or that you might consider. And here's what that might mean. And then here's some stuff probably here in the middle of that everybody's going to have to be able to touch on. This is, you know, this is like, you really have to do this stuff. You have to, pretty much have to.
You have to.
Like, yep. Okay. But then it's kind of condensing into, I don't know. Some of this stuff, maybe, some of this stuff, no, like you even said, you know, like if it doesn't work for you, that's fine, because this is just beliefs and it's what I've seen, but I can't say.
Right.
And I wonder, I really like to have the chance to break the fourth wall at points like this, because you and I have had a conversation and it's been great, and you're easy to talk to and you're a bright guy.
Appreciate that, man.
Audience too, and thank you. And they come here to, you know, to learn and to listen and to think about things. And let's say that one of them is right in front of you, whoever it is that you imagine it to be. And they say, Justin, you know, I listened to that conversation you had with Chance, and I checked out some of the other stuff, and I really like what you have to say about using these frameworks and these tools to organize and optimize your day so that you can become the most creative and the most harmonically creative kind of person that you could be. I have a vision of myself that's beyond me right now, but I want to learn how to get there. And, you know, I heard you talk about how you want to take care of your body and you want to take care of your inputs and stuff. And I think I'm doing a pretty good job. And that person's sitting in there, and they're like, they're ready to really start going on the path. They've got the basics taken care of. And they say, Justin, you know, I'm just not sure what the thing that's going to pop this bubble into the next paradigm is going to be. And if that person was sitting in front of you asking that, what are maybe one or two things you would tell them? Like, you got your fundamentals, and here's the way to start to zoom out and see the world a little bit bigger and the potential is a little bit bigger. What would you tell them?
Sure. In that situation? Okay, so I would say that the first thing and the most important thing is to go back to what got you to where you are with the basics and the fundamentals, which is clarity. It's always clarity. Let's say that larger goal is, I want to help people. Okay, that's wonderful. How do you want to help people? How many people do you want to help? what do those people look like, right? Who, what ages are they? What genders are they? What demographics are they, right? Figuring out those types of things and trying to get a specific in that overarching goal and mission as you possibly can. I've had this conversation before, and I, forgive me, I can't remember who it was with, but it was like, it may have been a multitude of people actually in a group. This idea that there is an ultimate purpose that we all kind of have for ourselves, right? Some kind of ultimate thing that we want to achieve in our lives and to share, but then it's broken into a lot of different little purposes that are not any in any way, shape, or form any less important than that ultimate purpose. But when you begin to get clear on what those individual purposes are, that's how you fundamentally achieve that ultimate purpose. It's not so much looking at it as you're painting a master painting as much as it is that you are crafting a master puzzle piece, right? Or a puzzle, excuse me, through individual pieces. So my advice to that person would be to get clear on that ultimate purpose, what it is that you want to accomplish, and then what does that look like 6 months from now? The likelihood that you're going to create that ultimate purpose in the span of 6 months is probably very low, right? Unless you have a relatively small ultimate purpose. But I think human beings lack foresight generally, and we have a hard time seeing what our life is going to look like probably about a year out. And then we begin to kind of speculate with what we would like multiple years out, but then it's only into that kind of very ethereal. And I would say that we can really only project as far as 6 months with a relative degree of accuracy, okay? So I would say get clear on what that ultimate purpose is and how you want to utilize it to serve not only your own fulfillment and your own wholeness, but also others and their own fulfillment and their own wholeness. Because no matter what it is, you're probably going to end up in some capacity giving to other people. Because everything that is shared has to be shared with other people. The artist can paint for their own fulfillment, but if there are no eyes to look upon the art and appreciate it, they're going to be fundamentally lacking a part of that fulfillment. And then what does that look like for you 6 months? How can you project forward 6 months to being closer to achieving that ultimate purpose? And then you break it down. What do you want to do on a monthly basis that allows you to achieve that 6 month goal? What do you do on a weekly basis that allows you to achieve that monthly basis? And then what allows, or what do you do on a daily basis that allows you to achieve on a weekly basis? And usually that looks like 3 to 4, maybe, activities on a daily basis that gets you just closer and closer and closer to that ultimate purpose. I think it's important to act with that in our mind, but to dedicate the time that we do spend on those smaller purposes as they look, right? For my own example, like putting out content on Twitter is important to me, right? And I've been on a brief hiatus for a couple of reasons. We can touch on that for a little bit if you like, because I think it's important to any creatives or entrepreneurs that are listening. But that aspect is a very small chunk of the whole purpose, but I dedicate my time to that because I know that building that up in these communities and sharing content and attracting people who want to work with me is something that feeds into that ultimate purpose. It's one channel, right? And you need to figure out what those channels are for you so that you can continue to get clearer and clearer and clearer. And the more clear you become on those kind of segmented purposes, the clearer you become on what that overarching ultimate purpose is.
Hmm. You know, just to quickly chuck in here, I recorded an episode of this podcast with a guy named Jamie Combs, and he's a cool dude, and he's he runs this natural foods business in the UK, and
very cool.
He just developed this framework, the four games. And, you know, you have yourself right here in the center, and then you have your short game, which is just sort of your immediate stuff.
I know a little bit about this, actually. Yep.
You have 6 months out or whatever, and then you have your long game, which is sort of long-term goals, and then you have your deep game, which is your story, yes, myths, your religious stuff, the, you know, like we talked about, the stuff where you go, I don't know, but this is the story I'm telling myself since I don't
right.
You know, not for nothing, that's an important little point right there, is the stuff you don't know, pick a good story then. You're going to pick a shitty one, you're going to pick a good one, because it's going to affect how you interface. Because, you know, I talked with Matt Stevens yesterday, and I said, look, there's stuff that's concrete. Like, if you exercise, there's biological imperatives. If you do this, this will happen. Okay, but there's, yes, stuff that's objective truth. If I think this, this happens. Well, just because the placebo effect is placebo there's still a placebo effect. Use it to your advantage. Pick a story that
works. Absolutely.
And do more good. So that's sort of maybe just my final thoughts to tack on to yours, but I really like the idea of sort of getting straight on your story. And one of the things I always recommend is people get their principles lined up, because then that frames in the direction of travel, so you can see and you can see the road.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that, because I think it's important. I think it's important to have that great grand thing that you want to become, or you want to see brought into the world, because even if it feels like beyond you, or especially if it feels like it's beyond you, that means you never have an end to the work that you have to do. And there's never a point where apathy or laziness is acceptable. If you have something that you believe is good and true, and that you can help facilitate bringing it about, it just brings perpetual responsibility. And so I love that message, and I want to make sure people kind of cue into what is maybe more subtle about that, which is it's how you attach meaning to your life, you know? But beyond that, man, I just really want to thank you for taking the time to come on the podcast and to have this sort of dialogue, because, you know, it's always interesting, the different characters that come on here. And I don't have all that many people who have made sense out of the sort of, let's call it the purple thinkers versus the brown thinkers. You know, you got the soil and then you got the hippie kind of, and they kind of all need to work together like we've been talking about, but you've done a very good job of taking it out there and then bringing it back and making it useful. And I appreciate the chance to do that with you. So thanks a lot for coming on.
Of course, man. Thanks for having me on. Likewise to you. I appreciate the time and energy that you put into this in order to give these different perspectives and valuable information to people.
I love it, man, to be honest.
No, of course, man.
I never want to stop doing it. It's a blast. But beyond that, you know, you talked about, you know, I work with people, I'm a coach, I do these things, I have this stuff to offer to help you. And I'd like to give you the chance to, you know, sort of boost your stuff and tell people where they can find you on social media and these other places and kind of what you do. And if you want to say hello to anybody, this would be a good time to do that. But just, this is your space to just say, here's where you can find me and this is what I do. So, you know, have at it.
Awesome. I appreciate that. So as far as content goes, at I am Justin C. Scott on Twitter, Instagram, and Medium. Obviously Twitter for tweets and threads, and Instagram for more video stuff, although I kind of cross posted all over the place, and then Medium for my more long form articles. For my coaching, I give away free 90-minute consultations to people who are interested in working with me. And if you feel like that's you, I have links on all of my social bios. You can find that with just a couple clicks, fill it out, and then I'll get back to you very shortly. And then, Chance, if you don't mind, I would like to touch on one more thing relative. So I just recently moved for the summer, right? And that was about a 2 or 3 week process. And because a week before I started moving and getting everything together for that, I was spending time with my family. And because of that fact, I have been kind of on a hiatus when it comes to my content on social media, right? And part of the reason that I did this was so that I could break a paradigm that I and a kind of degree of pattern that I had fallen into with my content that was good, but I perceived it as not being as great as it could be. And I, for anyone who's creative out there, or anyone that's an entrepreneur out there, I want you to consider the benefit of stepping away from your work to have the same kind of importance as the periods in which you hyper-focus on your work and spend very long, dedicated periods putting out some degree of something into the world, because that allows you to truly step back and reflect on what it is that you're bringing to the table and allows you to see what you can start to kind of step away from and what you can begin to bring out that will increase your ability to produce more effectively, hopefully doing more with less. But I think that's something that too many people who aren't creative think about, because they think that we just need to be going nonstop all day, every day, 24/7, 7 days a week, and that's the only way to do it, when the time for decompression and reflection is infinitely more important. And some of the biggest jumps that I've ever had when it comes to my content or my business has been after times through which I stepped away from it for a week or 2 weeks and just lived, focused on my own self, focused on my experiences with the people that I love, focused on taking on new habits or patterns that were beyond kind of the social realm or the creative realm, so that I could utilize those new foundational habits, insights, perceptions to enhance to a greater level that which I put out creatively. So I just wanted to kind of add that, I think, on the end of this, because I think that is such an important perception that I don't think is talked about enough. But beyond that, again, at I am Justin C. Scott, for all of my social, you can find me there. And then Chance retweets my stuff pretty consistently when I'm dropping gold. So you can find my stuff, I'm sure, on his page as well.
Look, I agree with your point there at the last two. Although it's a hard one for me, I tend to be an obsessive guy, but one thing I will.
Me too, man. Me too.
Push hard. Do push hard. Push way
absolutely.
Hard.
Absolutely. Push way hard. I agree.
Find your limits and start. I even recommend starting to break a little bit, you know, like if you imagine it just like a membrane, the membrane just starts to pull apart a little bit and then you go, okay, I'm gonna let that heal. I'm gonna step back and then really embrace that time off. Go do more stuff with your friends or your family, or pick up a book and go sit in the backyard, or go on a vacation and really embrace the vacation. Turn your phone off and leave it in the hotel or whatever, but make sure you really take the time to rejuvenate physically, get more sleep, mentally, just zone out on a Pulp Fiction book or talk with friends socially, that kind of thing. Make sure you do it. Make sure you embrace it fully. Make sure you embrace it with the same vigor, like Justin said, that you would your projects. Fully immerse yourself in that rejuvenation process. And then you'll still feel like you're kicking ass because you're getting the most rejuvenated.
Yes, absolutely. And then when you come back, you're more excited and amped to come back, right? It's like, it's just like going to the gym. It's like you need, especially if you're an avid gym goer of any kind, you need sometimes those two week long periods of nothing in order for your body to completely recuperate. And then when you step back, you have a fire that was not present before, and you're able to just go so much harder and faster. And it's like that idea of, in order to speed up, slow the fuck down in your process, and you'll end up getting more done with less time, because you're not as you're operating 3 times at 100% rather than, let's say, 7 times at 15%, right?
My father-in-law's cousin is fond of saying, quality is speed.
Yep. That's it. That's it, man. I love it.
Yeah. So look, I think that's a pretty great episode. I think there's a lot in there for people to have. And once again, you know, just thanks for coming on and sharing your insights. And is there anybody you want to say hello to before we wrap this up?
Not in any one person or particular. Obviously, I love you and your time and your ability to have this platform. Almost everyone that you've had on this show, I respect in some form or capacity. I just want to kind of note how grateful I am for the time that we live in, and having the ability to make these connections and to have this community, and to really be able to share our very individual stories, ideas, concepts, ways of approaching self-betterment and deeper senses of fulfillment, because it really allows us to keep each other accountable, build each other up. And I just think it's such a beautiful thing.
Me too, man. I'm grateful for it every day. And, I wouldn't want to presume to tell people what to do. I'm just trying to present them options for how to do it. And
absolutely. You know. That's it.
So look, if you're good, I'm good.
Yeah, man, I'm good. This was great. I had a wonderful time.
Good. All right. Logo Centrifugal Podcast. I've been Chance Lunsford. He's been Justin C. Scott. And this has all been Allegedly. We're out.
We here at the Logo Centrifugal Podcast work hard to bring you the highest quality audio, the best editing, and the most professionalism of any podcast on the market. Either that, or we do the exact opposite. Either way, consider supporting the podcast. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can support the podcast by supporting the podcast. There's a link somewhere, and I encourage you to click the link to support the podcast professionally.